In the church's year, the readings of the Transfiguration, they come around at this time in Lent, but they also get repeated during the course of the year as well. The Transfiguration is mentioned in Mark and Matthew and Luke's Gospel. Yet, neither of the Gospel writers were present at that event. Neither of them. However, it must have been significant because, as I say, the three Gospel writers included it there. It is, the Transfiguration, the source of much beautiful artwork in the church. I have two favourites. One was, or is, actually at the church in Young, my previous parish, and the window is where the glass windows are here. It's a long shooting gallery of a church, very beautiful but long, and the window at the back that you look out is actually the Transfiguration, and it's quite large. And it's done in the traditional lead light style with the characters being depicted in the typical biblical way. But when it came to the Feast of Transfiguration, I always found it a great aid when I was talking about it because it was staring me in the face. So when we talk about the characters in there, Moses and Elijah with Jesus talking to them, and then Peter, James and John, these characters were always there. The other window, for those of you who get to travel next to France, is in the beautiful World Heritage Cathedral of Chartres. And Chartres is where people who do lead lighting, that's where they go to learn that art. And there's one window in Chartres Cathedral, which is the Transfiguration window. And it's set at the back, and as the sun sets, the body of Jesus starts to glow. It's very, very beautifully done. You can't miss it unless, of course, you go in the morning, and you will miss it. But it's always stayed in my mind, Chartres Cathedral and at Young. So it's the object of a much beautiful art. For preachers, there are many aspects to look at, and for people sitting in the pews, there are many things to contemplate with the Transfiguration. I remember as a young priest that I nearly always focused for a long time on Peter, wanting to say, "This is wonderful that we're here, let's build three tents." He wanted to capture the moment, take a Kodak moment and keep it as it was, because it was so good. But as I've grown older and older, different aspects come to me with the Transfiguration. Not to say that the others aren't important, but I now look at different things. I'm preparing, some of you know, to go on a lead a pilgrimage tour just after Easter this year, and many members of the parish have been with me on this previously. I think it was 2016, where we go into the Holy Land. And I have 34 members, a big contingent from Catholic Education in the Archdiocese, coming with me this time. And we will be going up to the Mount of Transfiguration. We will be having Mass there. And once again, it is a very, very beautiful, difficult site to get to, but very, very beautiful. And the artists and the artisans have done a great job. And they focus on all of the main characters. But my point of mentioning the pilgrimage is that, well, pilgrimage is a great word because it draws us into a journey. The Transfiguration took place on part of Jesus' journey. We are in the journey of Lent now, second week, but it was Jesus' journey. He was on his way to Jerusalem. He had gathered his disciples around him, and he had handpicked 12 to come close to him, who would eventually be the apostles. So this significant scene in Scripture must draw together the element of journey, and I give that to you tonight, on the journey of your life, not just in Lent, but on the journey of your life. Why would this be significant? I went and had a read of the old Summa Theologicae from St. Thomas Aquinas, not because I'm academic, you know I'm not. But St. Thomas has a beautiful, in his third volume, he has a beautiful opening up of the understanding of the Transfiguration. And one of the first things he says is that the Transfiguration in his view, happened because of the journey of the apostles and the disciples. It was tough. And you can identify with this, I know I can, that when life is tough and I've got a goal, I sometimes lose my way. So the transfiguration takes place, Jesus knowing what was ahead of him, the apostles had no idea. So he's focused on what's ahead of him, but in order to inspire, to encourage the apostles, he gives them this one little glimpse of the end goal. And that little glimpse is the glorification of himself. We're told that he glowed almost, that his clothes became as white as snow, and there was a light that shone through him. It didn't last long, but it was enough to inspire and encourage them to go on. And they didn't understand what was happening, so that's why they've passed the story on so vividly. They didn't understand at that time, and I think that the transfiguration in our life, perhaps in the second week of Lent, is giving us a small glimpse of the light and the glory of God. Of course, the characters, it just means that we can focus on the goal again, because in our own life, that goal is to be in the eternal light of God, the eternal embrace of God. I really think that that St. Thomas Aquinas is close to the mark there, and that is probably why saints in the church, when they are depicted in art, and the holy men and women are depicted in art, they always have a halo around them, because they give us a glimpse of the light and the glory of God, of what's possible, what it can be, what we can attain, and what we will attain if we be faithful to the journey. I think that's probably why the halo is there. You know holy men and women in your own lives. And sometimes we do see, or we sense, that holiness that surrounds them, and it turns on a light in us. We are inspired by who they are and what they do. So we're on a journey, as was Jesus and the apostles, and in every journey there's a beginning and an end. So not only is the journey about the destination, which is what I think the glory is alluding to there, but it's all about the time as well, the time that we leave and the time that we arrive. Now, God's time is nothing like the time that you and I are used to. And I've said that many, many times. So, but we look at the transfiguration and we have Moses and Elijah. Now, we know that Moses represents the law because he gave because he received the Ten Commandments. And we know that Elijah was always seen as the greatest of the prophets. So, but they are in the past. I'm not going to unpack the law and the prophets tonight. They are in the past. Then he's got Peter, James and John. They are in the future. The whole church is going to be founded on these men, Peter, James and John. And then you have Jesus in the present. So in the journey of our own life, certainly we look back to the past, where we've come from, and we do have our goals set on a future, but we have to also be in the moment. And I think that the transfiguration, and I don't think I'm stretching this, is actually a Eucharistic event, because what happens here in a very short time brings in the past. The words that Jesus gave us, he brings them in. They become present here and now as his body and blood to help us on our journey into the future to reach our goal. And I don't think that's stretching it. And I think the characters of Moses and Elijah help us plug into the history, the past. The characters of Peter, James and John, I think they, once we understand who they were and their role that unfolded, we get a sense of the immortal destiny of mankind, which is the glory of God. But there has to be a moment where those two come together, where they join. And for us, as faithful people, it is when we celebrate Eucharist around this altar. Peter, James and John, why were they there, I wonder? I would say that Peter was there because he loved Jesus the most. After his resurrection, Jesus said to Peter, Do you love me? Three times Peter answered, you know I love you, Lord. So I suspect Jesus drew Peter up because he was going to be the rock on which the church is founded, but he seems to have demonstrated his love for Jesus the most. Why was John there? We hear in Scripture several times the disciple whom Jesus loved, and that was John, the disciple who at the Last Supper leant his head on Jesus' breast, the disciple whom Jesus loved. Peter loved Jesus the most. Jesus loved John the most. Not that it's a competition, and that leaves his brother James. Why was James there? James was the first of the apostles to be killed, to be martyred for the faith. And that's probably why James was there, because from this event in the here and now, then, James was going to be the first to die for love of Jesus. So I say to you tonight, as I look at the Transfiguration, it is about journey, our pilgrimage, but it is also about relationship. I'm talking firstly about Eucharistic relationship, and then I'm talking secondly about our relationship with God, with Jesus Christ himself. Peter loved Jesus the most. He had that relationship. Jesus loved John the most, the beloved disciple. That's relationship. James, dying for the faith, firstly, that is relationship. James had his eyes set on the goal, and he was confident that that relationship was going to be sealed. So I will just put to you at this time of our Lenten journey, where are you up to on your pilgrimage at the moment? Where are you up to in your journey? How far are you prepared to go? It's not just about giving up. How far are you prepared to go to strengthen that relationship with Jesus, like Peter, James, and John?